CliffCentral.com. Good morning. It's time for another dose of Disrupt with Mpumi Nhlapo. Welcome to the show. Thank you to our sponsors, T-Systems, for making yet another dose of the show possible. Today, I talked to a man whose LinkedIn profile describes him as an entrepreneurial leader, South Africa's country head of U.S. corporation, Rombie, Mr. Leroy Ratnaker. Leroy, how are you?
Good morning. Good to be here. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thank you for joining us on a chilly winter's morning. Are you feeling good?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about Rombie, but overall the topic is around the Internet of Things. Before we get into the topic, I'm going to just go through a few statistics that I came across preparing for the show. We know, Leroy, that there are going to be, by 2020, about 1.4 to 1.5 billion cell phone devices in Africa. We know that there'll be 4 billion connected devices. So beyond just our smartphones and our SIM card enabled devices, we're going to have other connected things. We know globally that, you know, in 2015, there were 15 billion connected devices. You know, in 2017, there's roughly 20 billion connected devices. And by 2024, that number is expected to explode to 62 billion connected devices. And all of this framed around this topic of the Internet of Things. So we'll get into the discussion around the Internet of Things. But I want to talk very briefly and introduce our listeners to the Rombie Corporation that you are country head in South Africa. And isn't that including Africa as well?
That's correct. We are focusing on the continent as a whole. South Africa was just a starting point and inception of our interaction with the continent. And we certainly hope to develop a presence basically across the continent and share the value proposition of Rombie to other countries in the continent as well.
Okay, so what I understand, Rombie supply chain and enterprise asset visibility company, pushing the boundaries on real-time visibility of assets and goods outside the four walls, I guess, of the business. You've got patented hardware. I've actually taken a picture, which we'll tweet, of the Rombie device so that the listeners can have an idea of exactly what we're talking about. And you've got an array of sensors, proprietary analytics, predictive reporting, and open APIs. So all of these very big terms.
Absolutely.
But we're going to unpack them over the next hour or so.
Certainly happy to do so.
Yes, and I see you operate in India as well, outside of the United States. So very quickly, where is Rombie based, besides California, where it was founded, I believe?
Right.
Where else are you based in the world?
So yes, Rombie was founded in San Francisco, in Silicon Valley. A lot of the company's culture and DNA is basically originating from that startup mentality from the Silicon Valley origin. We quickly developed a presence in India as well. So India and the United States account for a very large quotient of our business and a larger quotient of our customers. But in the last year or two, we've grown pretty rapidly. South Africa being one of our locations of presence. And since then, we've also added an office in Germany, in Mexico, soon to be in Brazil as well, and a presence that's developing in Asia as well. So we're growing very rapidly at a very fast clip. And we have almost 150 customers now across all these different regions. So a very fast pace of growth in the last few years.
Okay, fantastic. And what exactly does Rombie do?
We started out in that space of providing visibility in the logistics space. So using IoT based technology basically to provide better visibility across multimodal journeys of goods. But I think since then, there's been a lot of interest in using that same capability in managing assets and providing visibility around high-value assets and their performance, a lot of analytics around how they're being used and potential opportunities for basically better scheduling and usage of those assets as well. And since Rombie is a IoT company, there's been a lot of investments that we've made in the platform as well. So shipment monitoring, shipment tracking and condition monitoring, as well as asset management, is the way I see it, two main use cases that will potentially expand to be across multiple other use cases as well, such as getting sensory information from other sensory devices, drones, other types of video based sensory devices that are providing video streams, etc. So there's a lot of potential here that needs to be that is available to be tapped over the longer term.
Okay, so if I were to maybe break that down and simplify it a bit, okay, so we've got all these connected devices. So Roambi is a device in itself. I can see it here. It's like a yellow box, I guess. What's inside here? This is an Internet of Things thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so what is it?
So I'll sort of speak first a little bit broadly, and then speak about the sensory devices themselves.
Fantastic.
So Roambi, in a sense, is the entire platform. So it is a software platform that sits in the cloud, as well as some of these proprietary sensory devices. The B, as you were pointing to, the yellow device that you were tweeting a diagram of. So in a sense, the platform provides that capability to ingest data from multiple different sensory devices, including the bees, to translate it, to process it, to share analytics. And we're making a lot of investments in artificial intelligence as well over the longer term to provide decision-making capability as part of that platform.
Okay.
The device that you were pointing to is a sensory device that is proprietary to us. It has a lot of IP and intellectual property that we've invested in. It contains a battery that allows that device to remain, powered, self-powered through a large portion of time. That particular device lasts about 90 days, basically, between charges.
90 days between charges.
That's correct. It also has a GSM module inside of it that communicates. It has a global SIM.
Okay.
So wherever that device happens to end up, whichever part of the world, it will still attach itself to a network, to a mobile network, and transmit the parameters around its presence and the conditions around it.
Okay.
And then it has a whole array of sensory capability that's built into that device as well, including a light sensor on the back. It has temperature, humidity sensors. It can sense altitude, shock, and vibration. So all that capability basically is built into that, and that can be included, on your assets. It could be included in your shipments, in your containers, and it provides you a whole host of information basically around where that shipment is located.
Okay.
and the conditions that surround the your goods essentially that are part of that shipment.
Fantastic. So, in effect, it is one of those 60 billion. Connected devices. The Roambi, as I'm holding it right now, would be one of those.
Certainly, that's the vision, to proliferate as many bees as possible around the world, and to be used in multiple different scenarios. But again, I would say that the vision for Roambi is that this is essentially one of those types of sensory devices that we use to bring data into the platform. We have multiple other scenarios that could potentially exist, as I mentioned, video streams, data that's coming in from sensory devices on drones.
Wow.
It could be different
types. Anyway, literally.
Yes, exactly. And we could be using all that data essentially to help customers make decisions around their business, around process excellence, how to operate their businesses more efficiently, how to reduce risk or mitigate risk around their operations, and so forth.
Great. So you've been in South Africa now for how long?
It's coming upon a year now.
Okay.
And it's been a gradual transition. My wife is actually South African, and we moved here last year. It was an easier transition for her. For me, it's been a gradual one, leaving behind 20 years of my life in San Francisco and gradually transitioning to spending more time out here in South Africa.
Don't worry, you're going to love it here.
So far, I am.
Fantastic.
I am loving it, yes.
And so in this year that you've been here, how are you performing? I mean, relative to you've worked in India, you've worked in Sri Lanka, you've worked in the United States. How's business in South Africa within the context of the Internet of Things? Are we growing fast? Are we making steady headway?
I think in some senses, there's a huge appetite for what it can bring to solve really interesting business problems. So I see it actually as a positive thing that there's a lot of potential, not just for our company, for other companies as well in this IoT space, to bring to bear some really interesting solutions to business problems in the country as well as the continent. So I think there's a huge appetite. I don't see it as any different than, let's say, life in the United States. I, in fact, think that perhaps there is a stronger interest, perhaps going from a place where there's a lot of opportunity, there's a lot of flexibility to, and companies that are growing very, very fast in, a space that's still maturing.
Yes. And from a business point of view, are we seeing any specific trend in terms of the applications of the Roambi? So where's the momentum in terms of the Internet of Things? Is it in any particular industries? I know earlier on you mentioned quite interesting use cases. Maybe you can touch on some of what you've seen in the time you've spent here trying to grow the business.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of interest in the process excellence space. So I think We originally pitched the product with interest in providing visibility to supply chains around goods, that are being transported across the world in multimodal journeys, whether it's a ship, a aircraft, or a truck journey on land, essentially.
Okay.
But I see that there's a lot of companies that are thinking very creatively in terms of how the technology can be leveraged for process excellence. So they're looking at different scenarios, like, for instance, how do I ensure that my products, such as ice cream, is monitored from an end-to-end perspective from the factory where it's manufactured through all the different parts of the supply chain, the distribution channels, until it gets to that end consumer so that I can manage temperature variations and risk that impacts the quality of the product, and how can I improve the distribution, reduce the lag times, improve my operational efficiencies and reduce my costs that are associated with some of those lag times and goods that are essentially that perish, especially in the perishable space, due to longer delivery periods. It could be when I've seen companies in the space, for instance, in construction, where they want to manage the distribution of concrete, in a timely manner to the different construction sites.
Okay.
Because there again, there's a time quotient that's involved in how the quality that's associated with the quality of that product that's delivered to the site.
Okay.
So that's concrete that's in a mixed format, essentially.
Yeah.
So different companies are looking at it, in very, very creative ways and trying to figure out how they can use this technology to improve their business operations, deliver a better product to their customers more efficiently at a lower cost, reduce their risks of losing some of those goods, et cetera.
Yes. And so is it this cross-industry that we're seeing within the South African context in terms of where the opportunities are showing themselves? You mentioned another very interesting one, the healthcare space. Just talk to me about that. You mentioned that, with this very specialized medical equipment, that sure. There are some use cases around that.
Absolutely. There's a lot of application in the healthcare space as we see it. One is obviously in tracking very high value assets in the hospitals themselves. So whether it's, X-ray machines and MRI machines, even down to the wheelchair, ensuring that some of these assets actually stay within the perimeters that they're supposed to stay, the geolocations, essentially. But there's also some very, very specialized medical equipment that move around the world, of which there are, I believe, fixed quantities and are used by doctors to perform, very specialized operations. And these companies that actually lease them out want to essentially understand where these high-value assets are so that they can deliver them in a timely manner to the hospitals that actually require it. And our technology, Roambi, is actually used in some of these contexts to track those goods, to provide insight to hospitals as to where they may be located and how you can acquire them and quickly serve the patient that needs it. So I think there's some really interesting use cases that we had not envisioned that our customers are essentially conceiving and bringing to us and asking us if we can help them solve it. So in a few cases, Rombi has been able to provide some interesting solutions in that space.
Yeah. And I guess that's where the magic happens with all these technologies, is when the users themselves start to come up with unique use cases that they would apply to that technology.
Absolutely. I think we go through different phases, and the first phase was to educate our potential customer around what we had to offer. And I think we are now in that next phase where they are starting to get comfortable with the technology and understand what Rombi can actually bring to them in other spaces in terms of value and improving their operational efficiency. So I think that's been very encouraging, and it opens our eyes to the possibilities of the technology as well.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I just want to take a step back a little bit, and we'll come back to Rombi, just to talk about this IoT, you know, this Internet of Things. There are many acronyms currently, and you would know, and every new thing has got its own acronym or its own definition. But just broadly for the audience, the Internet of Things, what does this encompass?
Well, I think from a very basic layman's perspective, we're going from that genre of the internet where we communicate as human beings on it to, machines actually starting to share data and intelligence across the internet. And broadly speaking, that's what it is. But I think that there's also a lot of buzz and hype around it. But I think if you look near term around where it's evolving to, I think that a lot of it is around collecting a lot of data points from, operational intelligence from different devices, being able to develop a lot of analytics across a broad range of data types that are available.
Okay.
And most importantly, being able to build a lot of intelligence where that decision-making capability can be provided. To better optimize the resources, to protect them, to reduce risk, to improve operational efficiencies. And I think that there's also a movement towards moving some of that intelligence towards the edge. So as opposed to streaming a lot of that data from the devices all the way through to the cloud, to actually move some of that intelligence to the periphery, to the edge, to the devices.
Can you just explain that in a bit more?
So absolutely. I think from a South Africa context, or from a, let's say, a continental context, you could have situations, for instance, as in mines, where there's limited connectivity, where there's a lot of rich operational intelligence that's been gathered by sensory devices, and being able to push some of that some of that decision-making capability to the edge, where perhaps there's limited capability of communicating that information, through to the cloud. That might be an interesting use case. There's also situations in logistics where you can build a lot of intelligence into the devices that are moving with the trucks, for instance, that are transporting goods, so that if you have two or three different scenarios that happen, you could perhaps characterize what might be a risk situation or an opportunity to improve efficiency of that delivery of that good, or to protect the quality of that good that's inside that vehicle. And I think that using that data in an intelligent way at the edge, as opposed to streaming that all the way, to the cloud and having decisions made, in the cloud, I think that's an interesting use case. And that's an area that we've been exploring as a company as well at Rombi.
Okay. So in effect, the value is not necessarily in the Rombi device itself, although, it's a good looking piece of equipment. It's in the data that it's able to generate, and in the use of that data.
Absolutely. It's a very powerful set of technologies that we've built into it, and we've built a lot of intellectual property around this capability, and we continue to enhance it to actually make it perform even better. So I think certainly the data is the objective to capture that rich set of data and bring it back into the platform. And then there's all these algorithms that we use to develop the analytics around that data, to present it back to the user and help them make decisions around their business. And that's where the value is.
Okay, and that will be the same for all other Internet of Things types of devices or projects. It's really about this big data phenomenon, which is something else I want to now get into, because in effect, when you've got 60 billion things sensing everything and creating data, the big challenge then becomes, what do you do with it? And how do you then extract value from that data? From your perspective, is that an area that we've got enough resource around? I know they talk about data scientists and all these other types of really elaborate and possibly complex types of functions. What are you seeing in that space?
Absolutely. I mean, we have a few folks of that nature in our organization as well. We have our own data scientists who are actually building models around the data that we gather for our customers. It's certainly an area that's evolving, I think. There's a lot of interest in South Africa and of course the rest of the world as well around this space. I think it's an area that we continue to invest in, and it's something that we see as exciting in front of us, basically.
Yes, yes. And is this big data space an area that we speak often about jobs, and we speak often about local skills, and I mean, it might be a challenging question for you given that you've only been here for a year, but I just want to explore the discussion a little bit to say, in the context of information needing to have context, a local context, is there then still room for local input in terms of that data analysis and interpreting what those results might mean?
Absolutely. I think from a career perspective, it's a huge space that I think even in the US, I think there's definitely a shortage of those skill sets. And I think there's a huge opportunity here in South Africa for folks who are pursuing their careers to kind of focus on this space. It's extension of their mathematical skills and their analytical skills, basically, to embrace data science as a career. I think perhaps the opportunities are still in the nascent stage, but I think it's going to be much bigger over time.
Okay. And would you say that there's a need to have that local context in terms of the information, or is it enough that the models are built and then they'll kind of tell you what's happening?
No, I think that's really important, I think, to have that local context. So it's not just building models, but understanding, putting meaning to it. And I think you need to have a local context around it. So if you see, there are certain social challenges, for instance, in this part of the geography, in this part of the world, that you can better apply data to, mitigate business challenges. So I think having that local context is very important.
Yes, yes. Just another topic on the data. We had those big ransomware attacks a week ago, which were global and really affected companies and organizations throughout the world. In fact, I read one article. They were talking about how these hackers had held Sony Pictures, one of their films. They'd held it to ransom to say they're going to leak it unless they get a couple of $1 million. Given that, these devices are transmitting all the sensitive data all the time, surely security becomes a major concern.
Yeah, it's been a sort of a area of focus for us as well, especially since we are providing a lot of insight to our customers around their high value assets, their movements, their conditions, and so forth. So there's a lot of sensitive data that's being moved between the devices and also stored in the cloud. So security has been a very strong imperative for us to ensure that we are protecting that data, that it's not susceptible to any nefarious use of it, essentially.
Yeah.
So I think that's been a very large point of focus in our business as well.
Okay.
And it'll continue to be.
Okay.
And I think, as much as sort of the bad guys, so to speak, have leveraged this area of new technology to kind of to create chaos, I think we've also Rombi has been very successful in actually thwarting some of the bad guys as well, because you know, some of the use cases that I've been exposed to here in South Africa, interestingly, have been in the hijacking space, for instance.
So okay.
We're able to provide our customers a lot of insight around where their goods are at.
You mean hijacking of like commercial vehicles?
Exactly, yes.
Okay,
so
yes.
These devices basically can be incorporated into the cargoes to locate them, to do quicker goods recovery.
Okay.
So I think that's an interesting use case as well. So I think it's not necessarily that the bad guys have been able to take advantage of IoT,
yes,
and a nascent area of technology to,
yes,
to kind of create chaos, but I think we've used it in some positive ways as well to reduce risk basically as well.
Mm. But and what about, I mean, it's a pretty small device. I can literally fit it in my pocket. You know, the question I have is, you know, the manipulation of these devices remotely. So if we're talking about, you know, these really smart hackers that are sitting, mm-hmm, in unknown parts of the world, what is the ability to, you know, to intercept these devices and control them differently? Because, you know, and I'm getting into a conversation around, we've got 60 billion devices across the world that are effectively going to be managing the way we live at some point,
right?
Because of the information that they'll generate and the feedback that'll come from that information. And so keeping those things secure. I mean, I know there's use cases around lifts and elevators, the maintenance thereof, machine, farming equipment. So they're really going to kind of run everything that we do. To what extent will we be sure that, you know, the data that's coming back in terms of making decisions on managing very sensitive and life critical equipment will not be compromised?
Absolutely.
And not just from a Rombi perspective. I'm talking now generally around this Internet of Things environment.
I can't speak to, I think, the industry as a whole and the efforts. I know there's some emphasis on security, and especially given, you know, some of the recent highly publicized events in the IoT space and hacking events, for instance.
Yes.
I think that Rombi specifically, we've invested a lot of intellectual property and a lot of detail into protecting how we communicate with these devices and how the devices are basically protected in terms of not allowing access from, you know, third parties essentially to.
Okay.
To basically use that information in an inappropriate manner. So we basically provide access to the system through an API, and that API basically has a lot of protocols of security built into it, so that if there was a connectivity that was happening between an enterprise system and the Rombi solution,
yes,
that is going to be moderated essentially through an API that had security built into it. So that's really a gateway to the data that's in those Rombi devices, and it has to pass through secure mechanisms. So that's an emphasis that we have as a company, as a culture, basically, in terms of how we do business with our customers, especially, as you mentioned, since we are protecting, you know, some very high value assets of our customers.
Yes, yes. So now, Leroy, just to maybe take a turn a little bit, to talk about you. You're a very interesting person. So you were born in Sri Lanka.
That's correct.
And then you moved to the United States.
That's correct. I grew up, my formative years were basically in Sri Lanka through secondary school. And I grew up during a time when there was a civil war that was emerging in the country. So my tertiary education, my university education, essentially was something that I accomplished out in the U.S. In Kansas. I studied aerospace engineering and industrial engineering.
Aerospace engineering.
That's correct.
Okay.
And then I moved out to Silicon Valley. I found it quite interesting. And I spent the last 20 something years out in Silicon Valley developing my career out there.
Okay. And what's that been like?
It was very exciting, and that's where I met Sanjay, who's the founder of Rombi, who was a very close friend of mine before I joined the company. And it was a great life out there in Silicon Valley, very exciting, living in sort of the in the center of all the innovations that have been kind of circumventing or sort of spreading around the world.
Yes.
You know, we lived a few blocks from some of the exciting companies like Uber and Airbnb and so forth that you're very familiar with, I'm sure, here in South Africa as well. So it was a great time living out there in Silicon Valley. And I think the move to South Africa was quite unstrategic, actually. I met and married a South African.
Okay, where did you meet her? In
we were actually Facebook friends for a very long time, and we spent a lot of time in LA and in Vegas and in San Francisco, and got to know each other, and of course in Sri Lanka as well.
Okay,
and we decided to get married a few years ago, and she preferred to live out in South Africa, so my my plan changed.
Okay,
and I found myself out in South Africa quite unstrategically, and it was a great opportunity for me at that point to, you know, bring Rombie to the African continent, basically to help develop the market out here.
Okay,
and not just in South Africa, but also we spent some time in Kenya, in Nairobi. Over the last few months, and we hope to basically broaden that presence to Nigeria and to other parts of the African continent as well.
Okay. And, you know, being that you were born in Sri Lanka, you moved to the United States, you're cricket?
Interestingly.
So you're a baseball man now?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that we tend to, you know, spend our lives following the sports that we grew up with.
That you grew up with, absolutely.
And you know, I didn't play cricket competitively, but certainly socially, and so I still, you know, follow it. And I, of course, was more sort of partial, I guess, to tennis and to rowing. That was that; those were my favorite sports.
Ah, interesting, interesting.
And I never really got baseball and football, to tell you quite, American football, to tell you quite frankly. So I've been in the U.S. for 20-something years.
And still don't understand it.
I still don't completely understand it. I watch it, but I don't, you know, I'm not, I don't follow it actively. So it's interesting that you kind of stay with those childhood sports throughout your life.
Mm. So on this show, as you know, we talk about disruption. And disruption, not necessarily just, you know, from a technology point of view, but also about the person. So, I mean, in your world, having studied, you know, aerospace engineering, were you always trying to take a disruptive approach to life? What was your thinking going into that field at the time?
Well, I think it was certainly looking for something different. My father was a airline pilot. He flew 747s for the most part of his life.
Oh, and, wow.
That was certainly an easy career path for me to follow, but I was looking for something different, for something, you know, a little bit, you know, deeper in that field, and aerospace was certainly the area that I decided to go into. But then once I sort of got into it, I realized that it was not just one discrete thing. Aerospace is made up of, you know, mathematical models. It's programming. We did a lot of coding, basically, for numerical methods, and, you know, understanding how air flows over different surfaces and so forth. And that exposed me to the world of computing. And I took those computing skills to my career, basically, in Silicon Valley. And I was a programmer. That's how I started my career.
So you're a developer in Silicon Valley.
Exactly. That's how I started. And that took me to, you know, understanding how businesses work, process, how to engineer processes, how to help customers. I worked with some of the large consulting organizations, Ernst & Young and Deloitte, which kind of changed my view of the whole world. And I was exposed to so many different industries, from telecom to manufacturing.
Wow.
And it kind of opened my eyes to a lot of different things. So when I still visit some of your factories here in South Africa, it's some of the most exciting things to do around understanding how they do business, how they build a car, how they you know, formulate a product. It's very interesting to me, and I sort of grew my career with feeding that curiosity to understand how you know, these different businesses operate.
Mm. So you spent a lot of time in Silicon Valley. You know, this term disruption is quite new, but my sense is that this disruptive energy has been
absolutely
in that environment for many years. Can you talk us through maybe the early days up until now around disruption? How does that environment, how do they function there? What can we learn from what's happening in Silicon Valley, how they go about doing business, and how they go about, I guess, harnessing this disruptive energy?
Sure, I think that's probably built into the DNA of that area. I mean, it started out with silicon, as you know, and that's why it's called Silicon Valley.
Yes.
And started out, you know, probably in the 60s, I guess, when, you know, when the chip industry started out there. Mm. And I think that, as you mentioned, disruption is sort of a newer term, but I think there's always that hunger to sort of innovate. That was really the...
Is it tangible?
Is it tangible? In some senses, maybe.
Okay.
But I think it's a cultural thing, right? It's a cultural thing that you constantly want to see how you can solve something, you know, differently,
okay.
Right? How you can look at a new opportunity to change the you know paradigm basically of how things are done.
Okay.
Today,
yeah.
So I think that's a cultural thing, and you know I've been in that area for I guess 20 something years now. When there was still a lot of agricultural, you know, roots to that region, and it's changed dramatically. So I think that it's something that I think has spread across the world. It's not now localized to California or to Silicon Valley. I think
yes.
You see that in India, you see that in Kenya, you see that in Nigeria,
yeah.
And certainly in South Africa, in Cape Town as well.
Mm.
You see a lot of companies looking at how you do business and how you can do it differently. So I think that has become sort of a more of a global phenomenon now, and I think that's exciting.
Yeah. And are there a lot of like incubators? I mean, I know it's quite a hot topic here, but I guess what I'm trying to tap into is it a case of people just going about and just doing things because there's a lot of competition? Or are there things that exist which create that ecosystem to enable this disruption, as we call it now, to happen?
I think it's a shift in people's perspectives as well. I think when I graduated from university, at least as far as I can remember, the big thing was to join one of the brand name companies out there, whether it was Sun Microsystems or Oracle or
yes.
Whatever the case might be. And I think now there's a lot of, emphasis around, or at least it's the age of the entrepreneur, you know, where there's a lot of resources for entrepreneurs. There's a culture that supports them, and I think for people to think differently and to think you know how business challenges can be solved in a different way. So I think that whole support system evolved, not just again in California. I think I see it happening out here in the continent of in the African continent as well.
Yes,
I see it happening in India. I see it happening in Eastern Europe, in Asia.
Absolutely.
Even in Sri Lanka, actually. So I think it's amazing and it's very exciting.
Mm. And it's an opportunity for even corporates, right? So it's not just about the entrepreneurial startups.
Yep.
I think there's an opportunity there for corporates to also look at themselves differently.
Yeah, certainly. I think there's that emphasis on being intrapreneurial within companies.
It's intrapreneurial, okay.
Yep. And my last company, for instance, Visa, in the Bay Area, was certainly trying to stimulate that whole concept essentially and develop it. And I think a lot of companies are doing it as well. So certainly I see that here again in South Africa as well.
Mm.
To some degree, I see some companies actually setting up incubators and Standard Bank, for instance, I believe has one. So
yes.
I think there's a lot of interest in this area.
So intrapreneurial meaning there's entrepreneurism within the organization.
Correct. That's
okay.
Correct.
And creating an environment where the staff effectively become entrepreneurs while still working for the business.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's different models of it. I think different companies have explored it differently. Some companies have spun off ideas and businesses out to the marketplace, and you know, with the option of acquiring them later on. And some others have dedicated fixed bandwidth or percentages of their employees' time towards innovation and hackathons and different processes of ideation, essentially, to bring new ideas into the company.
Yes. So I want to now bring it back to the logistics industry, Rombi, and the Internet of Things. If I look at a company like Amazon, which had some $75 billion of revenues, which essentially means probably, you know, millions, hundreds of millions of goods shipped all over the world. This is a very complex space that we're talking about, where your organization plays. Where do you see it going into the future?
I think, I can see it moving in a couple of different directions. I think our roots are certainly in the logistics space. But I think that we are making investments to kind of present Rombi as a IoT platform that's a bit broader in its application. So not just specifically restricted to the logistics space, but it could extend itself to security. It could look at, for instance, data that's coming from sensory devices in public transportation to understand, patterns, real-time patterns of people moving through public transportation, and how to schedule vehicles more efficiently to provide a better public service to those passengers. Okay. So I see that we can potentially grow into other areas of use cases and applications as well. So the space is fairly broad, but I think that to some degree that the business that you win, the customers that you have, kind of dictate the direction that you go in.
Yes,
eventually.
Yes.
So it's a possibility that we'll stay very close to logistics, but I certainly see applications that are broader than that as well.
Consumer applications, maybe? Any ideas around that?
Certainly. I think, as I mentioned to you, we have the ability to link up with sensory devices in multiple different contexts to process information from those sensory devices and develop a lot of analytics as an IoT platform.
Mm.
And an example might be, for instance, your local bank, brand, essentially, where we are able to understand patterns of movements into those different branches, how the branches are utilized, how the tellers are utilized, are they using devices or mechanisms such as ATMs basically to process most of their transactions, and what's happening on a real-time basis.
Yes.
And so I think there's a lot of different retail, let's say, consumer applications of that technology as well that we are interested in and looking into, and that we've been approached about. So I think there's some interesting possibilities for Rombi in the IoT space as a platform.
Great. And now, given that we're talking GSM, so it's SIM cards, to what extent is the Internet of Things space reliant on the network, service providers?
It's not necessarily. So there are emerging standards that are out there, multiple other standards as well.
Okay.
Unfortunately, though, I think, there's these standards are still evolving. So
yes,
there's multiple different ones and LoRa and so forth, where they are not established as yet in a very firm way. And I think Rombi is looking for direction as well in terms of which ones will become the more established standards for communication.
Okay.
And when that does happen, we'll essentially explore using alternative methods to basically communicate data from whether it's shipments or parking lots or whatever the case might be to the cloud.
Yeah, because I know, specifically in South Africa, the data costs are quite high.
Yeah.
And so for companies, the more devices they have, obviously the costs come up.
Absolutely.
Quite significantly.
Yep.
Is that something that you see in corporates dealing with?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that certainly it is definitely a fact that there is a cost associated with it. I think one of the key advantages that Rombi has is that we struck up an early agreement with Deutsche Telekom. And if you actually Google us on the web, you'll actually see that, the details of that transaction. Deutsche Telekom not only agreed to provide us you know, a very favorable plan in terms of data, but also invested in Rombi as well, because of the promise that they saw in what we were delivering to this IoT space.
Okay.
So I think we have a few advantages in that regard, but I certainly agree that from an industry perspective, that it's probably one of the challenges that companies have to overcome in terms of the costs of communicating that data. And hence also, the as I mentioned earlier, there is that technology being developed to make some of that, some of those decisions on the edge as well, as perhaps some of that will help as well.
Okay, so on the edge, meaning that the data would sit to a certain extent on the device
well,
itself?
There'll be larger devices that have, let's say, Rombi-like technology in them, larger or smaller, that have that intelligence built into them so that they can make some of that decision. It'll have that those business rules built into them to make those decisions at the edge, as opposed to transmitting large volumes of data to have actionable intelligence, at the cloud.
Okay.
Cloud. Yeah.
So, I mean, being that we're talking Internet of Things, I know then the topic of robotics, and very quickly, I mean, the robotics space vis-a-vis Internet of Things, is that an area that you've seen developing as well in terms of the customers that you're seeing, or are we still in the very early stages there?
Well, I think I can't speak to it in detail. I'm not a complete expert in the area, but
okay.
But I think that there is some linkages. So basically, being the fact that we play in this logistics space and provide a lot of visibility, there's this whole genre of Industry 4.0 that's developing, that's basically leveraging a lot of robotics and artificial intelligence basically to run factories a lot better. So we're kind of a part of that sort of emerging phenomenon, I guess, or classification that's called Industry 4.0 in a very broad sense, that depicts what that next generation of manufacturing and industry is going to look like. So we are very much part of that collage, I guess, of solutions.
Fantastic. Leroy, it has been really great. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
But before you go, three questions, or two for you, which I ask to all the guests who come on board. The first one being disruption. I mean, we've spoken about it a little bit. We touched on it. You've lived through disruption, I guess, maybe at the coalface, being in Silicon Valley. How would you define disruption for yourself?
Oh, well, it's been an evolution, I think, for me. Mm-hmm. So I think I grew up wanting to design airplanes, and when I got there and I learned how to do that, then I decided I wanted to studying computing in more depth, and when I accomplished that, I wanted to study business process in more depth, and I feel like I still have a lot of entrepreneurial aspects of me that are still unexplored. So I think it's an evolution, it's a journey for me. I don't think it'll necessarily ever stop. So for me, it's learning about a new culture, new geography, a new set of challenges, new businesses, new opportunities to bring solutions. It's probably part of an engineer mindset that I kind of grew up with and was educated in as well.
Okay, so in a nutshell, you'd say disruption is about a continuous journey of learning, in effect, to be continuously learning and discovering new things.
Absolutely.
And you've been in South Africa almost a year, maybe a challenging question, but your vision, maybe frame it from the perspective of the company, if you choose, or yourself, but your vision for the country and the continent in this Industry 4.0 technology-driven world.
Well, I'd love to see us succeed not only as Rombi as a company, but I'd love to see us bring some value socially as well. I mean, I think there's a lot of applications of our technology in the social realm. I've reached out to a few organizations that move blood, for instance, in parts of the continent.
Okay.
I'm interested to see if we can leverage our technology to better transport pharmaceuticals and blood, for instance, to locations and preserve them, and to provide that technology to see if we can actually solve the problem in a better way. So I think there's some interesting applications of our technology, and I'm hoping that we can not only be successful from a commercial perspective, but that we can bring value socially as well to the continent.
Thank you very much. Mr. Leroy Ratnyaka, bringing us today to the end of Disrupt with Mpumi Nhlapo. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to our sponsors, T-Systems, for yet another disruptive engagement. You can follow us on www.t-systems.co.za. Also catch another conversation on disruption with T-Systems Disruptors Show every Thursday at 7:30 on CNBC Africa. That's DSTV channel 410. Until next week, thank you very much. Have a wonderful day. CliffCentral.com.